You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, August 30th, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, amidst a COVID surge in the wake of Hurricane Ida, New Orleans loses power. We will get a live report from Dr. Marc-Alain Derry in New Orleans, infectious disease physician and epidemiologist at Access Health Louisiana, host of the Daily Noise Filter podcast. Also on the program today, U.S. nears peak COVID hospitalizations as the EU restricts U.S. travelers again. Florida court quashes Governor DeSantis's mask mandate ban, allows schools to impose mask mandates. Meanwhile, U.S. strikes ISIS in Afghanistan, reportedly killing at least 9 civilians, 6 of whom were children. The Afghan evacuation flights continue. Over 240,000 Afghans have been evacuated to 11 other countries. Meanwhile, Democrats scramble to revive the eviction moratorium, but it's too little, too late. Could impact up to 4 million tenants within 2 months. Also, we are a week out from up to 8 million people losing unemployment insurance. Providers and insurers line up to fight the Democratic Medicare expansion. And in the wake of the Remain in Mexico and eviction moratorium rulings, the Supreme Court's shadow docket gets a little more scrutiny. Sirhan, convicted of killing Robert F. Kennedy, granted the first phase of parole. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. I am back from vacation. Emma Vigeland did a great job in my absence. Thank you, Emma.
You're welcome, Sam.
I also picked up this habit of talking in a staccato cadence, which, of course...
Where did you learn that?
I just picked it up on vacation.
Ah, yeah. Well, did you point out your suntan yet?
Do I need to?
No. It speaks for itself, I guess.
Yeah, got a little time on the beach, got some rest. Well, had the kids. So it wasn't exactly the most restful thing, but it was enjoyable. We had fun. Back at it, and a lot of really disturbing news, not the least of which is happening down in New Orleans. And we will be talking to Dr. Marc-Alain Derry in a few moments, who at this point, I think he is in either the city hall or in the convention center. And they're still dealing with basically a citywide power outage and an inability to evacuate patients in these hospitals there. We will talk more with him in a moment. Meanwhile, the evacuation continues in Afghanistan. I mentioned 240,000 people have been, Afghans have been evacuated to 11 different countries. We are, the United States is continuing our evacuation flights at least until tomorrow. Supposedly, we are going to wrap it up then. And of course, there are, you know, it's hard to sort of get a sense of whether there are people who think it's possible that we could stay in Afghanistan, or that there is people, there are warmongers out there who are trying to punish and make an example and set a precedent that you can't pull out of a 20-year war. And
well, they're not mutually exclusive.
And they're not mutually exclusive. It's sort of a twofer. Here is, let's just look at some of this. Is it's upsetting. But frankly, you know, this has been going on for 20 years. And we talk about the reports of what's going to happen, particularly in regards to women, but broadly speaking, Afghan citizens in Kabul under Taliban rule. Very often, we get very little reports of Afghans living in rural areas who have been suffering through 20 years of well, and prior to that, civil war, but 20 years of a war between Americans and the Taliban, and have been, and as well as all of the other sort of militia groups in Afghanistan, and the periodic drone strikes, bombings that end up killing civilians. And this weekend, there was a reminder of that, that we don't generally see, because this one was in Kabul and it got a little bit more attention. Not necessarily confirmed by any outside agencies, although it's being widely reported that a strike in Kabul killed at least 9 civilians, 6 of whom were children. Here is some footage of the funeral that took place in the wake of that drone strike, ostensibly to head off a suicide bomber, an ISIS suicide bomber.
I'm here right now at the funerals of 10 civilians who were killed, including 7 children, in what is believed to have been a U.S. drone strike yesterday. Terrific. This was supposed to have been an airstrike against ISIS-K suicide bombers, but instead, the victims appear to have been a family that has nothing to do with it. It's unclear, so we're being careful at the moment in terms of that, just to make sure that it's the same strike that we're talking about. If it is, that is just a massive indictment of this war, how it ends. And it ends as it began, with civilians bearing the brunt of it, as always.
That is a video comes from Niba Boulos. He is a staff foreign correspondent in the Middle East for the Los Angeles Times. Corrected, it was 10 civilians and 7 children.
Well, it's conflicting reports. That's what Washington Post is reporting. And I think what you read was, it's not exactly clear at this point, but multiple children dead.
And this has been the dynamic, except for minus the attention. That has been going on for decades.
And sometimes the funerals would be hit too.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, is this not just a crystallization of the entire war on terror, right? There was a suicide bomber at the Kabul airport by ISIS-K. A number of U.S. officials, including H.R. McMaster, try to say, well, maybe ISIS-K is working with the Taliban, even though they're arch rivals. So there's that desire to connect these two rival groups and say they're working together. And then we respond with a drone strike that then kills more civilians. Like, that is the entire war on terror encapsulated into a series of chain events and reactions that happened within days of one another.
It's fascinating, too, to hear that ISIS-K working with the Taliban, their rivals, but it's also exactly what we heard that justified the invasion of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Al-Qaeda, which well, there was connection between Al-Qaeda in Iran, although also rivals. Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, also rivals. And we just get sucked deeper into this, and civilians who pay the price. Here is Chris Murphy on with Jake Tapper on CNN. And again, there is a lot of reporting that comes out of Kabul, but very little that comes out from the rest of the country, where people were just literally dying for the strikes to end. But here is Chris Murphy on with Jake Tapper.
What happens to the women and girls of Afghanistan? I mean, there are already anecdotal reports of Taliban fighters grabbing 14-year-old girls, and I mean, I would call it a forced marriage, but it's not a marriage. It's forced rape and slavery. I mean, what happens to these girls?
It's part of the reason why we were there for 20 years, right? We were in the business of trying to stand up an Afghan government that would be able to protect those girls. And in the end, the Afghan government and the security forces decided not to fight for them. The question is, should we have stayed there forever in order to protect those advances in part of the country? Remember, the Taliban, by the time 2021 rolled around, already controlled more than half of the country. It's a tough question, Jake, but I think if you ask my constituents, they were not necessarily willing to sacrifice another 20 years of American blood and treasure as to the question of who controls Afghanistan. I know that's a really hard conversation, but there are really awful despotic regimes all around the world. And the United States does not make the decision to send our troops into every single one when we have an issue with the human rights decisions of a particular foreign regime.
Well, often there are allies.
Yeah.
Senator Murphy.
Tapper. exactly the point.
He kind of stumbled onto that one.
Right. I mean, that was, you know, I think I understand why a U.S. politician sort of uses the lens and the perspective of exclusively of his constituents and the treasure and blood that we spill of ours, you know, and sort of only implies that there's also a price that are paid by civilians around the country. But at the very least, that's a fairly nuanced conversation, and ended on the right note, it seems to me, where very hard to make a moral argument for continuance our occupation there after 20 years. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment, and we'll be speaking to Mark Elaine Derry in just a moment. Folks, we got two sponsors. Just going to change course here for a moment. Two sponsors for today's program. One is a site that I've used many times, givewell.org. Many people, particularly towards the end of the year, but particularly amongst times like these, are looking for a good charity to give to. Givewell.org has helped over 50,000 donors find places where their donations can save or improve the lives the most. GiveWell's recommended charities have rigorous academic independent studies of the cost effectiveness of their programs. Here's how it works. GiveWell dedicates over 20,000 hours a year to researching charitable organizations. They handpick a few of the highest impact evidence-based charities. Over 50,000 donors have used GiveWell. They've donated more than $750 million. These donations save over 75,000 lives and improve the lives of millions. And here's the best part. GiveWell is free. GiveWell doesn't take a cut of your donation. They allocate your tax-deductible donation to the charity you choose. Plus, they publish all of their research on their site for free. I found Give Directly through GiveWell. It is, the studies have shown giving directly to people who need money is the best way to get them out of poverty and extreme poverty. But there are other charities there, but Give Directly, which I don't think has any relationship with GiveWell other than the similarity in the name, I found through there. But you can find other charities. You can get ratings on charities. And if you've never donated to GiveWell's recommended charities before, you can have your donation matched up to $1,000. You can do so before the end of August or as long as the matching funds last. So you only have 1 or 2 days left to head over there. To claim your match, go to givewell.org and pick podcast at the Majority Report and the Majority Report at checkout. That's givewell.org, pick podcast and the Majority Report at checkout. Make sure they know you heard about GiveWell from the Majority Report to get your donation matched up to $1,000. That's 2 days. So go check it out. You can double your impact. Also, today's sponsor, they are dressing me very well. I've got a sweater right over there on the couch right now. It's not exactly sweater weather, but I got ahead of it.
Breaking news, Sam does not dress himself.
Well, I do my best. But this season, you can let Stitch Fix do all the hard work like I have. Stitch Fix offers clothing hand-selected by expert stylists for your unique size, style, and budget. Every piece is chosen for your fit and your life so you can look and feel your best. And this is the way it works. They send it to you. You try the pieces on at home before you buy. You keep what you love. You return what you don't. Stitch Fix has free shipping and easy returns or exchanges. Prepaid return envelope is included. I've told the story of the two shirts I got over the summer. I can't remember what the names of them are now. But one was a sort of a polo style gray one. I thought that was the one that I was going to keep, and that my stretch, my reach shirt was that blue one, the button down short sleeve shirt. I ended up sending back the gray one, keeping the blue one. So I expanded my sartorial repertoire, and it was an easy return on the polo. There's no subscription required. You just pay $20 for a styling fee for each box, which gets credited towards pieces you keep. There are no hidden fees ever. Stitch Fix has styles and clothing to fit any occasion for women, men, and kids. They ship all over the U.S. and available in the U.K. as well. And I got right over there a baseball style, that's what they call it.
Yeah.
Cardigan sweater, zip up. And folks, you're going to be seeing that once the weather turns. But I want to get in there early. Get started today at stitchfix.com. They know what I like. They know what I like now. I've been doing the thumb up and thumb down thing. Get started today at stitchfix.com/majority. You get 25% off when you keep everything in your fix. That's stitchfix.com/majority for 25% off when you keep everything in your fix at stitchfix.com/majority. All right. I want to welcome back to the program Dr. Mark Allendary. He is an infectious disease physician and epidemiologist at Access Health Louisiana, host of the Daily Noise Filter podcast. Mark Lane, where are you zooming with us from now?
It's City Hall in New Orleans.
And so the power's back on there?
No, just in City Hall. So City Hall has its own generators. The power was out maybe for a couple hours last night until they were able to fix it. And then obviously there's Wi-Fi here as well. That's how obviously I'm zooming into you. But the rest of the city, there's no power at all.
All right. So, tell us, just give us a brief rundown of I guess, the past 24 hours. But maybe it's important for us to understand the context prior to that, because this is not just a hurricane situation. This is a real problem in terms of the hospitals.
Absolutely. I mean, this is almost this is the perfect storm. It was the convergence of two storms, one literal storm and then one viral storm as well. The last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we saw a massive uptick of cases that you guys have been documenting on the show of Delta. The hospitals have been crazy. These are some of they were the longest days that I've ever worked. These are some of the most sickest patients I've ever worked with in the hospitals. The COVID units were packed. And I just want to say before I let this slip my mind, these nurses are working 12 hours a day in these Tyvek suits. I'm there a couple of hours, but they're there 12 hours a day, cleaning, feeding. They're true heroes. I just want to just say that on the outset. They're true heroes. Big face masks, just amazing work that they're doing. I'm inspired by them every time I walk in. But the we just started to see a downturn. I felt it last Wednesday or Thursday because I just wasn't getting as many daily consults that I usually get for COVID. And then certainly the data supports that. The cases are still going down. Hospitalizations are still going up. But it just felt like it was starting to lessen. And as soon as we were kind of going, ah, thank goodness that's over, then comes Ida, you know. And then this was the largest storm that has hit Louisiana in recorded memory. We were certainly, it hit the day of Katrina, the August 29th, of course, is a day that's imprinted in all of our brains, kind of much like 9/11 is for the rest of the country. August 29th for people from New Orleans is a big day. And I will say this, that the levee system held up remarkably well, and we've learned our lessons over the course of the last 16 years. For example, I just went out for a drive to check on my my apartment or my condo, and then also check on our cat. Trees down everywhere, but windows weren't broken. And so what I've since learned was that prior to Katrina, roofs were made out of gravel because it was the gravel captured heat. But that gravel made for projectiles during hurricanes. So that's why there were a lot of broken windows after Hurricane Katrina. And of course, the roofs were made with nails. So there was a lot of flat tires after Katrina because of all these nails that had got lifted off of the roofs during the storm. So that largely is not here. So the lessons learned from Katrina were certainly applied with respect to levees holding up, billions of dollars spent in really reinforcing the levees. Thankfully. And then, of course, the same thing with all the other things I mentioned, rooftops and this sort of stuff. I don't know what it's like on the outlying outside of the levee system yet. I haven't been able to read the news or look at stuff. Again, there's no power. So a lot of the places are having a hard time. Media outlets are having a hard time broadcasting as well. So then why am I at City Hall? And my wife is the deputy chief of staff for Mayor Cantrell. So I'm in her office right now. But I also work with the health department in many ways. And yesterday, I came here to work the phones with for medical emergencies. And the one thing that we kept getting phone calls over and over again was, what do I do about my oxygen? Because oxygen tanks and concentrators work off of electricity. So as the power started to go out all throughout the city, people were obviously very concerned, and there's still a major concern of what's going to happen with oxygen. And then, of course, people who are on hemodialysis on Monday, Wednesday, Fridays. So today's a Monday. So there are a lot of people who got dialyzed on Friday who went Saturday and Sunday as expected, but then on Monday they should be getting dialyzed. And so I'm not really sure what is happening with those folks right now. And in fact, as soon as I'm done here, I'm off to go work to direct a medical shelter that they're opening up, that the health department is opening up for this sort of stuff, for oxygenation, for people who may be feeling sick or whatever, so they could see a doctor. So that's where I'm headed as soon as I'm done here. But it's been pretty intense. I've never seen anything like this in my life. I've gone through many storms. This was a Category 4. It hit the southernmost part of Louisiana yesterday, I think at around 3 o'clock. The wind started whipping up at around 5 when you could still go outside. And it was the deepest howling I've ever heard and experienced. It was like this deep baritone as the winds were pushing through the buildings of downtown, and you could hear this storm coming. Then eventually, obviously, we couldn't be sitting outside, even though we were undercover. The health department's on the 8th floor of City Hall. So I had a perfect perch just to sit and watch the most intense storm pass through. Winds, of course, were 120, 130 mile winds. The rain obviously was horizontal. it was flying sideways, and debris flying everywhere. I was watching things just rip off, and even debris that was floating up to the 8th floor as well. The winds were blowing so hard that they were pushing the Mississippi River backwards, just to kind of give you an idea how hard. And today, before I jumped on this call, I wanted to run to look at our condo and to feed the cat, make sure she was okay, and trees down everywhere. I live on a street in downtown New Orleans that's full of trees. Almost every single one of them are down. There's a little bit of structural damage around the city. Some buildings collapsed, those that were older, that could sustain the wind forces. And as of right now, we don't know what we know of one confirmed death, but we don't really know what that's going to look like. And we'll find that we'll know more as time goes on.
I know that, that, it, you know, and you can see in the data that, over the past, like you said, the number of COVID infections dropped, I guess by 27% over the 14-day change. Hospitalizations are up because that's a lagging indicator. There was also reports, I guess, over the weekend that prior to Ida, that Children's Hospital in New Orleans required a federal surge team of support. And so what's... I know that there was no way to evacuate these patients because all of the hospitals within the region, and we're talking not the region of New Orleans, we're talking like the South, essentially the South.
Gulf South.
There's just no room for COVID patients right now. What's happening in regards to that? Like, are there people on who are on ventilators that is this problematic for them? What has been going on with that and what's happening just, you know, more generally with COVID down there, particularly with the kids?
Right. So obviously, as you said, the what we're seeing, and I can't remember the last time I was on the show, and I think I may have even talked about it. We're seeing a shift with this Delta. We have a large amount of people, I think maybe 80% in the U.S. over the age of 65 or 70. I can't remember the statistics exactly in my head. I'm a little anxious and didn't sleep very much last night. But we have very high vaccination rates in the elderly. So what we're seeing is COVID is finding those people who aren't vaccinated. And, you know, obviously those that are under 12 are obviously not vaccinated. So we are seeing a shift. So in my last couple of weeks, I've seen and taken care of mostly 20, 30, 40-year-olds. Very, very healthy. Mostly men, very, very healthy, and mostly 90% unvaccinated. When we are looking specifically at children, as you said, Children's Hospital was full. I don't remember a time that Children's Hospital has been full before, and there has been several strike teams that have been helping. FEMA's been sending strike teams. They sent a strike team to the hospital where I'm at West Jeff, but we've been doing really good. The doctors have been, we've been really keeping up. We have a very tight-knit community at West Jeff, and so West Jefferson Hospital. And so we've been working really hard, but obviously the strike team was needed at Children's Hospital such that they were sent. I have not, like I said, I've not heard or seen Children's Hospital be full like that before. So it is very, very striking. And again, very, very distressing that that people aren't being vaccinated, because the best way to protect children is to be vaccinated yourself, and to make sure that when children go out into schools and stuff, that they're masked as well. But I will say this, that the hospitals are full. Certainly the hospital that I have privileges at is full. We're using areas of the hospital that had never been either used for patient care or most specifically places that had never been intensive care units or where we're putting COVID units in. And I will say this, that it was with a lot of anxiety that I had was telling people who were calling saying, what do I do about my oxygen? You know, we do have certain points where people can swap out their small tanks, but those small tanks were only 2 hours worth of oxygen. So I was telling people we're going to have to go to the ER, and I'm sending people to go to the ER right now when I know the ERs are full is really something that was very distressing for me to do. But I had to guide people to do something. So I'm sending people to go to the hospitals that are already full, people who are already vulnerable or possibly immunocompromised. That's why they're on oxygen in the first place. And then I'm sending them to the hub of where COVID is. So it was very stressful, and it remains to be stressful now. And again, as soon as I leave here, I'll have a better idea of what's happening. Once I hit this medical shelter, I'll have a better idea of how things are being sustained out there.
I don't want to hold you too long, because I know you got stuff to do, and I don't want to pepper you with too many questions.
That's okay.
I'm a little bit fried.
My shift starts in whatever. They said whenever I'm done with this, I can head over there.
The biggest danger here, right? I mean, this harkens back to the beginning of the pandemic, when we were talking about bending the curve, because the issue here is there is simply not room in these hospitals to deal with situations like this. What happens when you reach capacity, and not just in terms of like physical capacity, but the capacity of a hospital to care for patients, because there's only so many doctors and so many nurses, and you need to sleep too.
I'll tell you what, every doctor and every nurse that I talk to, if we're not talking about patient care and we're just letting our guards down, we're all saying the same thing, that we're getting tired. It's getting very, very tiring. It's very, very hard. I mean, I appreciate these doctors that are going on strike. I really do. I see where they're coming from. And people will say to me, well, you know, the Hippocratic Oath. And I respond that, well, the Hippocratic Oath was predicated on the fact that people and governments would take care. They would do the right thing, right? Like, if there's a vaccine, you would take it, right? That was what the Hippocratic Oath assumed, that people would participate in the healthcare process. And that's why we're doing the job that we do. So I appreciate why they, you know, that they're walking out, because they're incredibly frustrated. I don't see myself doing that, but it is starting to get very taxing. And this storm that came through is just another just incredibly taxing event. And nerves are going to be frayed. I'm going to focus on giving the best care possible, making sure that I remember all my internal checklists when I need to do something, this, that, or whatever. But I certainly hope this doesn't happen. But I am starting to get somewhat concerned about, you know, the mental health of our healthcare workers. You know, we were talking about flattening the curve. If you look at the curve of the U.S. today, that cases are still going way, way, way up right now, right? And you see, when we were talking about bending or flattening the curve, the case load was like tiny, you know, it was a fraction of where, but everybody was saying flatten the curve. And it was great, but we don't hear any of that right now. And what we're seeing is just a blatant disregard. I mean, we're seeing governors in the South, the entire South, right? Highest cases, highest mortality, highest hospitalizations. That's going to change very soon, because COVID is going to find all of the people who are vulnerable, and then it's going to start shifting to other states that are having motorcycle rallies that are poorly vaccinated, like South Dakota. It's going to start finding places like in Iowa that's having their major state fair. That's going to be a million people who are going in there. As you know, I'm a musician, so some of my musician friends went and played a show in Iowa, I think, a festival, which was crazy for me to think about that. They didn't.
Oh no,
he's frozen.
It's a blatant disregard for what is happening with us. And I know that I've talked about this before, that, you know, you look at the me societies and the we societies, and we live in a me society. And there's just no, you know, we can't sustain doing what we're doing if people are constantly just looking out for themselves rather than looking out for the community. And as physicians, as healthcare workers, as nurses or whatever, we can only be here for a certain amount of time. I mean, I'll tell you a story that Dr. Cantor, who's our chief medical officer of the state, he's an ER doctor, and he told the story of a person who had a heart attack in Baton Rouge, and they had to go to 6 different hospitals before they were able to get care. And it wasn't because the hospitals were full. They are, but with a heart attack, they'll bring you in, because time is muscle. Every minute that passes by that they don't clear that heart attack, part of your muscle dies. it wasn't because of that. It was because there wasn't enough nurses to take care. It was six hospitals who didn't have the nursing staff to take care of this individual. So we're playing it as a society. We're playing a very, very dangerous game. Louisiana does not have the vaccination rates. Orleans Parish does. And what we're seeing, the cases are going down in Orleans Parish, largely due to the fact that we have a mask mandate, largely, and we're starting to see a vaccine mandate is starting to kick in as well. But it's largely because of the mask mandate. It's largely due to the fact that we have very high vaccination rate. And then also it's just the nature of this virus, that it's very much a lives fast, dies young type of virus. And so we're going to see it burn through the South, and then you're going to start to see it's going to start finding pockets around the country that are in poorly vaccinated states. And then it's going to do the same thing. But just wait, because just like last year when we had multiple hurricanes lined up in the Gulf, we're going to see another variant that's right around the corner, because we just don't have the global vaccination rates that we need to have. And until, you know, we saw the president, you know, was talking about waiving the TRIPS, you know, the TRIPS or the patent, the intellectual patent property on these vaccines, but has not moved since then, right? And so until countries like Brazil, like India, like Thailand can start making their own vaccines, we're going to be in this conundrum where, okay, so let's say Delta's gone, but right around the corner is Lambda. And right. Lambda is starting to show evidence of being vaccine evasive. And let's say we get through Lambda, then we'll eventually get to the one that I make up. I call it Delta, Delta, Epsilon. We get to Delta, Delta, Epsilon, and that one is completely vaccine evasive. What do we do at that point? And so these are the concerns, you know, especially somebody like myself who thinks about this, who's a COVID expert, it's of great concern that we're here. And then again, like you said, like we opened up, you have the convergence of two storms, the most powerful storm in the history of Louisiana, with the most powerful surge that we've seen. And we're only at the beginning. I can report back in a week or two to see what actually transpired from all this. And lastly, I will say this, that thankfully, again, the flood walls, the levees held up. So there was no flooding like there was with Katrina, but we're completely without power as I'm talking to you right now. There's no air conditioning in this office. There's pockets of electricity around City Hall. And again, we're lucky that my wife's got, she has power in her office. There's no air. There's no air. Obviously outside right now, it's hot. It's humid. It's a typical humid summer day in New Orleans where air conditioners are usually running. There isn't that. So without power, and I don't know if you heard, there was a power tower in Avondale, which is a southwestern part of New Orleans, that just fell right into the river. And as a result of that, the entire network is completely down. And so we're expected to not have power for who knows. I hear different people say different things. The mayor is right now doing a press conference. So she's probably giving this information as we speak, but we're expected to not have power for quite some time. And I got in my car to go home, as I mentioned. And as I got in my car, I'm like, okay, well, everything's cool. And then I realized, right, my wife and I both have electric cars. So we only have, now fortunately, New Orleans is a small place, so we can walk or ride bikes. So that's fortunate. But the hospital where I work is about 10 miles away. So it's 20 miles round trip. So eventually those miles are going to, and I have a 2014 electric vehicle. So the battery's down to like 50 or 60 miles a charge. So without a charge, obviously. So that's another thing that just occurred to me as I was driving home to look after the cat, that we both have electric cars and we have no charging capabilities. And what this really speaks to is something that we as New Orleanians have been saying for quite a long time, the same thing with folks in Texas, I would imagine too, is they have to put these wires underground. This is ridiculous that that our system, which is so dependent on electricity and power, and that these are not underground. And why are we not using more renewable energy? I mean, you can see the sun shining brightly behind me, and all of this would be a complete, you know, at least there would be something for us to be able to have. I'm not necessarily for me, I'm fine being uncomfortable, but it's the people who require oxygen. It's the people who are requiring infusions for home infusions, for antibiotics, for whatever therapies they're needing, for people for dialysis, you know, this sort of stuff. There are people who do a nightly dialysis that's called peritoneal dialysis. Those people do it every night, and those people without power. So this is, we're at the beginning. Thankfully, the storm passed. Thankfully, the levees held up. But now it's a matter of just sitting and waiting to see and doing one of these things. The governor just did a press release where he said that right now there's one known death, but he predicts that there's going to be more as these problems of not having power, heat strokes. We know that the elderly and the vulnerable are subjected to extremes of temperatures, particularly heat. So this is going to do is going to fill up the hospitals even more. And again, you're putting vulnerable people in the hospitals. And I have seen people in the hospitals who were COVID negative, because everybody gets tested as soon as they get in, and they may be in the hospital for like 9 days, 10 days for something completely different, who develop COVID in the hospital, which is not a surprise. I'm working with, I have a patient right now who came in for something completely different, a pneumonia, necrotizing pneumonia, and developed COVID while he was in house. And so that's a real possibility. And so it's very distressing, and it's a great concern.
Mark Gallen, one final question. It's a little bit general, and if you're not up to it at this moment, that's fine. But you know, you mentioned masking. Vaccine rates have started to go up, probably as a function of mandates, probably as a function of hopefully people like realizing it's problematic. The big thing now with a lot of kids going back to school is masking. A story out of California that details how an unvaccinated teacher went in. There's a mask mandate there, but during some class reading, she didn't use her mask. Front row, kids in the front row, 80% of them got COVID. It diminished the further back they were. Spoke to Dr. Michael Osterholm a while back about masks. He talked about the difference. You got 20 minutes with a cloth mask in a room that is sealed with someone who has COVID. Presuming, I'm not sure if they're wearing a mask or not, and the quality of the mask. Can you just speak a little bit about that dynamic? I've seen videos online where people are trying to argue masks don't mean anything. You can do the cigarette test, and you can see the smoke coming out. But the amount of smoke that comes out and the freeness of it and going in, too, into your, that matters as to your ability to catch COVID, right?
Right. It does. And I have differed. I have a different opinion than Dr. Osterholm, who I admire greatly. And last summer we had a public kind of back and forth through op-eds. And I heard your interview with him. And again, I respect him greatly. I think that he's slightly off with the mask. I am, and I've heard you kind of quote him several times, Sam, so I appreciate you letting me kind of give you my opinion on. I think any facial covering is helpful. And a lot of people like myself get frustrated with Dr. Osterholm because he makes it seem like unless you have an N95, I have an N95 around here somewhere, unless you have an N95, you're not protected. Well, to a certain degree, to the letter of the science, he's correct. I can't argue that point, but he's also, beyond being a scientist, he's a public health practitioner. And I just wish he just didn't have as emphatic an approach toward it. I'm much more, I remember, I think you were talking to, I forget who it was, you were talking to someone from The Intercept, I think, and you were saying, you know, if two people were sitting in the room with N95s, they can talk all day long and they would not get the virus. And that's true. But I'm telling you from personal experience, I see doctors and nurses just walking around the hospitals with just surgical masks like this, just a 3-ply surgical mask, and they never got COVID. And they are in people's faces listening to their heart and lungs every day. So I think he's a little emphatic about it. And I see where he's coming from. And again, you know, he put an op-ed out, and I put an op-ed out responding to him. So I see where he's coming. I think just any facial covering really does the trick. You know, I think the first time we talked, I was you know, unclear about how much facial coverings and where we were with facial coverings at that point. I knew that they were going to be helpful, but now I'm sold because I see it in the hospital every day. People, I wear an N95 and then I cover my N95 with a mask so that I can hold on to my N95 for as long as I can, basically until the strap breaks or I can feel too much air coming through. And then I'll get rid of it and pick up another one. But when I'm out in the community, I just will mask or I'll double mask and I feel very safe. I know plenty of other doctors that have done that and they've done very, very well. So yes, the quality of the mask matters to the letter of the law. Yes. But I would say if you,
it's the difference between saying a seatbelt, you know, without an airbag, it may not be as protective, but it's still protective. And, exactly. And, you know, no seatbelt in like a tank is also going to be protective. Like, I mean, there's degrees, but you don't want to eschew the, you know, the, any type of protection because it's not the maximal protection.
That's my beef with that. And when I heard that interview with that you gave with him, it was frustrating for me because I was like, yes, he's right to the letter of the law.
And to be clear, that's the difference between a public health policy and perhaps a physician who is making an assessment of something, right?
Let me see if I can rephrase that. He's an epidemiologist and public health practitioner. So that's what makes me like, if he were like a pure hardcore aerosol scientist, of which that they do exist, I can understand where he's coming from. But again, he's taking a very emphatic approach toward it. And as a public health practitioner, I would hope that, and I listen to his podcast every week and he really just sticks to the science very, very emphatically. Whereas again, like people like me who are on the front line, who are in the hospitals, and I see my colleagues just walking around with just a 3-ply mask and they just change it when they leave the hospital, they do fine. They're vaccinated and they're fine. Now, if we're talking unvaccinated, maybe we don't know that yet, but I can't say more than anything else. Like it's getting tiring to see that we're still having these mask wars, to see these flight attendants having to chastise the folks that are flying. It's incredible to see these governors on both sides of the states, and Florida on one side and Texas on the other, that are really putting their political career really ahead of public safety. It's nice to see these judges are slapping back against them. It's nice to hear the president talk about, well, if you're not going to get money for your school district, the feds will come in and make sure that you guys get paid. That's the right thing to do. I agree with that, because all that they're trying to do on the local level is just try to protect their folks. They're protecting the children, because if you don't do that, we're going to see this virus find as many people who are unvaccinated, and it will affect them. And then ultimately that affects us. So not only is it going to affect their health, and again, we haven't even said word one about what the long-term effects of COVID are beyond just what we refer to as long COVID, right? The so-called long hauler syndrome or post-COVID syndrome. We don't know what sort of cardiac effects it could have. We don't know what kind of pulmonary effects it could have, endovascular effects. We don't know any of that because we're not out, but we have seen it with people who have survived Ebola. Right, we have seen it with other epidemic diseases as well. And just to kind of let you know, there are Ebola outbreaks happening right now in Africa, as well as Marburg outbreaks as well. So while we have our own perfect storm, there are other parts of the world that have viral hemorrhagic diseases, as well as COVID circulating as well. So it's a time right now, and I wish these governors would just stop putting their own careers ahead of themselves and look to public safety. And I think somebody may have made the point on your show or wherever, but I think to a large degree that if you are largely giving false advice, like we're starting to see these medical licensing boards, state boards are starting to pull licenses away from physicians who are out there making these false statements. And I wish that there was an equivalent for governors or for politicians as well. Now, of course, that's called the voters, But then, of course, anytime the election comes around, so much money gets thrown into there that they fool their voters. There is political malpractice that is being that's being practiced right now by politicians. And I had a reporter once ask me, what can we do? What can you do to stop the misinformation? And I said back to him, what can I do? You're the press. This is your job, right? You're the Constitution. You're the only profession named in the Constitution. It's your job to hold the powerful at check. I'm just one small voice. You have a platform. And then when he ended, he said, if you could wave a magic wand, what would you do? I said, you know what you could do? Every night, have four or five physicians, three, two, however many you want, to put them on 10 minutes a day at the top, let's say 10 o'clock every night. You then feed us all of the misinformation that was fed that day by politicians or from Facebook, and just give us a half hour to unpack each one of them, and so that we can explain how that works. And we don't have that platform, and misinformation circulates six times faster than real information does, because it's all clickbait. It's sexy, you know, things that people are going to want to click on, whereas a scientific paper is a scientific paper. It's dry. It's not meant to be exciting. And so we are subject to misinformation, and that misinformation is without question driving what we're seeing right now.
Well, Marco Landeri, thank you so much for your time today. I'd like to catch up with you. We can talk maybe in the, you know, when you're on the other side of this crisis, talk a little bit about the vaccine efficacy waning perhaps, and other issues that we'd like to address. But I really appreciate your taking the time, and know it's, you're under a tremendous amount of duress and stress right now.
Thank you, Sam. And Emma, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with a couple more stuff before we wrap things up. We're back. Let's look at the doctor had mentioned, you know, the problems in Louisiana in terms of evacuating patients. They had enough time to be aware of the potential of Ida coming. But the problem is they didn't have enough time to go far enough to where you could evacuate these patients, because places like Florida, Texas, surrounding states are being hit so hard with COVID right now that there are simply not either the beds and what Derry said about the nurses. This is the thing that I think people don't fully appreciate in terms of, you know,
the human power behind treating all of these COVID patients. Yeah. I mean, the immense exhaustion. Oh, but don't worry, we clapped outside of our windows, Sam.
Well, but the point is like, people just think capacity when you hear the shorthand of like, there's only so many beds in the ICU. The issue is not literally just the beds.
It's the manpower.
You can
get
blow up mattresses and you can find a gymnasium. The problem is that nurses are trained. medical equipment exists.
You know, we joke about this, but North Dakota was really playing on that difference. They were saying, we have these beds available, but they weren't actually staffed.
Well, that's the thing, is that, and I don't know. I can't tell if people are ignorant about this or willfully ignorant, but it is not just, it's not like, well, we're a hotel and we can find the beds. We're just going to cut back a little bit on the service. There's not going to be any room service tonight. No, that's not what happens in in treating people.
No, but mints on the pillow.
Exactly.
But like the thing is, I also think that people just don't want to think about hospitals until they have to think about them. No one wants to think about the blood and sweat that goes into treating this kind of deadly disease.
And we also have a situation in this country where we have massive hospital conglomerates who are trying to squeeze every dollar of profit they can out of it. We have cutbacks on public hospitals. They want no slack. And so instead of having proper staffs for hospitals as is, they always understaff by 10-15% because that's their profit margin. You see it with the nurses in St. Vincent's up in Worcester, but you see it all across the country. And no slack in the system. In fact, the opposite of no slack. I mean, I should say the opposite of slack. There's always going to be a slight, we're always going to run this, you know, with at 100% capacity with 95% of what we need or 92% of what we need. And that's where our profit comes from. And
what do you know? It falls on the backs of the workers.
Indeed. Here is John Bell Edwards on CNN Sunday talking about that dynamic about there's nowhere for us to evacuate these people from, too.
We had four hurricanes last year during COVID, but we had a small fraction of the number of people in our hospitals that we currently have. We have more people in the hospital today, 2,450 with COVID, than we had at any point before this current surge. And when Hurricane Laura hit last year, we only had about 300 in the hospitals. So evacuating hospitals is not going to be possible because there's nowhere to bring those patients to. There's no excess capacity anywhere else in the state or outside the state. And so we're really worried about prolonged power outages.
And speaking of the prolonged power outages, you heard Mark Allen Derry talk about the sort of the material implications of this. And he said, right now I'm in the city hall. We could have renewable energy. We could have solar panels on our hospitals, and that would provide power in this type of situation. We have an entire city without power. You've got people on dialysis. You've got people on oxygen. And we are right on the verge of a crisis with these people. And simultaneously, we have a big infrastructure bill, multiple ones, in Congress. And these issues are connected. And he, credit where credit's due, Bill Cassidy, Republican senator from Louisiana, making this point on CNBC.
Again, $50 billion is in there for resiliency, $65 billion in there to harden the grid, things that certainly would help here. And so now where Republicans are, I don't know yet, but I'm sure hoping that Republicans look around my state, see this damage, and say if there's money for resiliency, money to harden the grid, money to help sewer and water, then maybe this is something we should be for.
Ah, well, good luck with that.
Exactly.
Because the poorest are going to be the people that bear the brunt of what happens in Louisiana and what happens due to the effects of climate change. Like, there is a direct line that can be drawn due to climate change, which is tackled in the reconciliation package that zero Republicans will ever vote for, to either right now. I mean, over the Gulf of Mexico, it's been described as bathwater, and it's been just churning out these tropical storms and intense storms and hurricanes because it's a lot warmer in the Gulf than it's been in years, specifically this summer. And so that's part of what we're seeing here. And, you know, that warming being a little bit abnormal, it's going to be very normal in the coming years. And we better, one, have the hard infrastructure to deal with it, like Cassidy says there, but that's not all we need. We need to tackle the root cause of this, which is climate change.
And I don't know, I saw I guess some research by the Democrats of their bill suggest that it will cut our carbon emissions by 45% by 2030. Now, none of this is locked in yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing this also on the expansion of the Medicare side, where you've got big, not just insurers who are worried about losing the profits from Medicare Advantage when it comes to dental and vision and whatnot, but also the providers. This is, you know, the sort of like, it goes under the radar, but it is the providers who I think are the biggest opponents to expansions of Medicare, whether it's Medicare for All or Medicare for More at this point, because they don't want their rates cut. The same reasons why they are fighting against the expansion of Medicare is also why we know it is the most efficient way to deliver healthcare, or at least healthcare payments, because they know they're going to get less money, because the buyer of healthcare, the payer of healthcare, the single payer, is going to be savvy enough to know how much they should be paying for each procedure, what the efficacy of these procedures are, et cetera, et cetera. And so the very fact that there is this type of lobby from Medi-Cal providers, again, from medical providers against Medicare, is exactly the same reasons why we, as people who need medicine or need healthcare, should be supportive of it. But we'll talk more about that in the coming days. We want to say goodbye to our viewers who are watching us on Peacock.
Goodbye, Peacock viewers. We will see you tomorrow. Really, and stepped on your toes there.
No, actually, I like that. That was good.
You handed sort of it off.
It was a handoff. We successfully finished. You finished my sentence. And hello to. All right. Well, we'll work on that part.
Yeah.
Well, we'll work
Thought I'd just leave you hanging.
Yeah. All right. I mean,
who are we welcoming in that's new? Welcome to the only YouTube audience. Welcome to the diminished audience.
Jeez. What went on here last week?
I almost really fell out of my chair earlier.
A little dark around here. My God. We're going to head into the fun half. I'm going to go through this story about this CDC report in California. About the story of the teacher. I mean, she must just feel horrible. It's unbelievable. Did you just laugh about that?
No, I just drooled. I'm sorry.
You're having a tough time today.
I'm really having a tough time. I tried to fix my mic and tried to sit back down in my chair earlier, and I almost fell down. There's a lot of things going on. Anyway. I hope no one caught that.
Yeah, I probably should.
This is being recorded, right?
Yeah, it's a good thing you didn't draw attention to it.
Exactly.
I was trying to play it off. Sam drew attention to it.
Well, I mean, you almost fell off your chair.
That wasn't on camera.
Well, I mean, had I not said anything, people would be like, "Boy, Sam really is not even paying attention to Emma, like having some type of like episode." Folks, just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you support the free show, and you get the extra content, and you keep this show chugging along. Also, our email has exploded.
Whoa.
We got to like file a report on the explosion. You can sign up for the AM Quickie newsletter every morning in your email box, as it were, at majority.fm. Scroll down to the bottom, put your email in there. We will never sell your email to anybody, and you can opt out at any time, I guess. I mean, I don't know why you would, but check it out, the AM Quickie. Also, check out our Discord, majoritydiscord.com, and justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Just some little teasers of this week.
Ooh.
So on Friday, I am not clear whether I'm going to do this at the beginning of the show or at the fun half. Make a switch.
Think it's got to be the whole show.
Well, there's no. But I think what I'm trying to figure out is this: it's going to be Suns out, Guns out, and listener Ronald Reagan has very graciously donated the Suns out, Guns out shirt. Mm. Yeah, I think he sent me like probably over the years like 12 of them. But the one that I'm probably going to go with, I'm not going to say what it is, but okay. It's people will like it.
You have to thank Ronald Reagan for the other gift.
Ronald Reagan sent me, what was that, a People magazine back there with J Lo and Ben Affleck, so I can catch up on my reading.
They're finding love again.
But here's the thing: I want to figure out a way, and I haven't been able to sort of figure it out, like how to use the Suns out, Guns out to raise funds for Afghan refugees if we can. I don't know how we would do that. Like I put out like part of my guns.
It seems each. Like you're kind of putting an obstacle in the way.
No, I'm going to do it. Right. I just want to figure out like what's the best way to peg. Maybe we'd just say like it's Suns out, Guns out.
Right. Just show your appreciation for the guns.
Yeah, exactly.
Donating at this link.
Yeah, maybe I'll do like a muscle flex
for each 100.
Every time we like $100.
Yes, that's actually flex. Yeah, that's a good idea.
It may not work out so well for me.
Well, I mean,
I feel like I'll pulse, I'll strain the muscle
by flexing.
Yeah, I haven't done that
that's
in about
an indictment.
15 years. So, we received a gift. I'll talk more about it, but it's a. I haven't opened it. I'm probably going to open it on air in the fun half. A portrait of Michael.
Oh.
I have a hint of what it looks like, but we'll do that later in the week. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian media universe?
Yeah, for patrons of Left Reckoning, yesterday we released a conversation between David's buddy Rob McPherson, and I. We talked briefly about Rob's experience working on Hollywood film sets and television sets, and how it's not actually as glamorous and it needs union protections, and often get. It's a very unionized industry, but it's also all freelance, so we talked about the dynamics there. Mm. And then we got to the fun stuff, which is talking about Radio Free Tom. You know Tom Nichols? He's like this
is
guy.
Is he like on Twitter?
Yeah,
like
he's a
like
Twitter
a super
guy.
Like Democrat? I think he's like gotten criticized by him at some time, but I've always been like, who is this dude?
He's a big resistance Democrat. Well, no. That's the thing, is like he's kind of a Republican, but he's been pretending he's a Democrat. So anyway, we talked about the time he called me a snowflake because I questioned why.
Are you okay?
I'm fine. we talked about him calling me a snowflake in the context of the 2016 primary, where he was saying actually working class people who vote Republican don't need anything more from, you know, the state. They're just whiners. Anyway, so that's all for patrons. Patreon.com/LeftReckoning to talk here.
Have you been waiting 5 years to address that?
Well, no, it came back up again because Tom Nichols is saying that Afghanistan is all of our faults.
Mm.
Even though he's quoted 20 years ago saying, oh, these plans look great to me. And also,
who's all of our fault?
Like everybody, like us Americans. Like we really have to look at ourselves. We kind of let the team down for Afghanistan.
Like in terms of not sufficiently supporting the war?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And, you know, putting the military in a tough spot by getting out of control and stuff like that. So.
Well, like, he's
I mean,
a
I don't
step
think that criticism
saying,
is wrong. We shouldn't have been there in the first place.
No, but he's saying the American people, the power
exactly.
structure.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's a step away from we're too woke.
It's kind of like, you know,
Afghanistan.
Yeah, and also, and he has a newer piece that's saying, like, I don't know, it's kind of confusing to say, but he says that nostalgia wasn't real because his first job as a 19-year-old was firing people at the Uniroyal factory, tire factory in his city, so like the economy was bad then too, but to which point I see, like, we know what wages and productivity stats are, so like your experience
at one factory when you were 19 does not actually
you saw the start
refute of, all of the data that's compiled by,
in fact it's like if anything it says like you saw the start of this process that is tearing the country apart right now.
That's
Man,
but he's a guy who wrote a book about how like experts should be in charge of everything. He's a big technocrat guy. Lives in like Annapolis.
Jennifer Rubin.
And then how do you then make an argument that experts should be in charge of everything? But my personal experience at my job when I was 19 is more relevant than the data that is compiled by experts.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. We won't even talk about that data. It's just like people's sense of nostalgia is a bit wonky, and the left exploits that. It's like, well, they might be exploiting like wage
that's
segregation.
Just a bizarre. That's bizarre. But all right, that sounds interesting. I'm getting now IMs about $500, and you got to do the calves dance on the IM.
I got a bit more $500.
Don't forget, check out Know Me Show. YouTube.com/The Know Me Keys Show, and see you in the fun half. 646-257-3920.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh no! Oh no! Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back, and the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back, and the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just wanna degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back, back, back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare!
Bring back DJ Denner.
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Denner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them. Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday. Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on. Come on. Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.